Welcome back to No Comic Book Club. My name is Luke.
The name's Dan.
Long time no see, Dan.
We're back, Luke. We're back.
Before we get into it, because I know we have a great warm-up coming up from Dan, let me just say we are today reading Babel by R.F. Kuang, and we're up to about chapter 10.
Precisely, we're about a third of the way through. We are at chapter 10.
That's right. But it's been a while, so we obviously need to get warmed up.
Before we get into it, Dan's been traveling around, and Dan has met a crazy person on his travels that he needs to tell you about.
Okay.
And by met, I mean my girlfriend met this person and had to tell me about it, because this is a special kind of crazy person.
Okay.
So, we were in Singapore, right?
Traveling all over the world.
Yeah. Damn. Oh, yeah. So, on the flight back from Singapore, my girlfriend was sitting next to somebody who, of course, obviously was coming back from Singapore as well, and was... This was their sixth flight to or from Singapore in the last month.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
And it was like, oh, okay. Like, did you travel around? Like, what did you see? And this person did not leave the airport.
Okay.
This person was flying from the U.S., from Houston... We got a lot of information. Flying from Houston to Singapore, and then just getting right back on that flight and coming back to the U.S. Over and over again. Luke, the reason why is so infuriating. The reason why is because United Airlines, this is not an ad, by the way, United Airlines has a special club that's called the Million Miles Club. And you get like not even that many perks if you're in this club, but it's like a lifetime membership, right?
Oh, okay, sure.
And so if you hit a million miles, you're in this club, you don't have to maintain it every year or whatever. It doesn't go away. You maintain your status permanently. Okay. And this person, Luke, this person is flying to Singapore and back because it's the most cost-effective way to get a million to get to a million miles.
Oh my gosh.
Luke, this is, we're talking about a 15-hour flight that this person is making only to get immediately back on the plane. This
cannot be real.
This is a person who's spending over 24 hours in a plane and then doing it again the next week because they're trying to reach
that's,
this.
Like, that's their weekend or something?
This is a person who's retired.
Okay.
It feels like a person, I don't know if you are this kind of a gamer, but some gamers really love getting achievements. They're like, I got to get 100% completion on this game. And so I got to find all the little acorns or whatever. I feel like there are people in real life that are like this. And I feel like we met one on our travels. Because it's like, why are you doing this? Just get status that year and then you don't have to get them. You don't have to be on a plane for 30 hours a week.
This is the okay, here's the thing that makes me the most upset about this.
Oh yeah, I haven't gotten the most upset yet, but I think we're probably in the same boat here.
Like, I understand if you're like, I want to get to a million miles, so I'm gonna take a bunch of trips.
Yes.
It's insane to not like do things while you're there.
like, not even spend the weekend. Like, not even, like, well, I'm here. Like, I want to get the miles, but I'm already here, so I might as well just, like, get a nice hotel, maybe go to one of the hawker stalls and get some nice food, see some things, go to the botanical gardens, maybe check out the orchid exhibit.
Right.
Spend a weekend.
Even if you're... Even if you're... And then it's, like, you don't... I'm now realizing as I'm trying to make this argument that, like, the whole situation is kind of unhinged, but, like,
it's
if you don't want to spend a lot of time each time, then you could be like, I've spent 6 days exploring Singapore, but not consecutive 6 days, right? Like, just take a day each time. Now, the more realistic one that I would do is I would go to other places.
Right. Correct.
And I realize that this person is making the argument that this is the most cost effective. But, like, at a certain point, we have to throw away efficiency and be like, what is life for?
This is what I mean. This is what I mean when I think it's like, it feels like somebody who's achievement hunting, because it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Right, like, they're getting, because I'm assuming the status thing is to make future travel better, right?
But it can't be that much better.
But like, setting even aside how much better it can be, like, this is assuming that you are going to take advantage of travel. So, like, why are you not also taking advantage of the insane amount of money that you're spending on this travel already?
Maybe they,
like, it's not the most cost effective, because now you're going to go in, I don't know, in next year, you're gonna be like, oh, I haven't been to Japan. Let's go check that out. Hey, guess what? You could have done that in your million mile quest.
It's true, because as soon as you hit the million mile marker, then your quest is over and you're not benefiting anymore from taking those flights. You know what I mean?
Right.
Those flights don't count anymore.
Towards the million miles, sure, but, like, towards life.
Right. But the point is, why not get two for one? Why not get the million miles and also have a nice trip? Like, do something fun.
I'm upset.
The thing that really gets my goat about this whole thing is, and I don't know if I should be mad at the airlines or at this person, I feel like the airlines need to just let you buy something like this. Like, because this person is using a bunch of air fuel, a bunch of jet fuel, to just, like, get numbers to go up on a screen. And I'm like, please don't do that. United should just let you pay them.
Yeah.
They should just have an option that's like, hey, give us $70,000, because I looked up what it would cost to actually get there. We're talking $70,000 to get to a million miles, by the way. We're also talking 170 real days of your life. No, 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 sorry. 70 days of your life. Fully 70 days. Just in the plane. That does not include how long it takes to, like, get to the airport, go through security, wait at the terminal. Let them pay for it, United. Let them just buy it from you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't make them actually fly it.
Well, I feel like United was like, we're not going to go through the rigmarole of setting up this payment system for the three weird freaks out there that are gonna do this. Because I'm sure there are plenty of people in the Million Mile Club who are just, like, traveling for, like, work, like, every other day or something like that.
Right. Luke, I have to tell you the craziest part of this whole thing.
You haven't done it yet?
Luke, so my girlfriend is in a row. The person next to her is this million mile lady. Mm-hmm. The dude that was in the window was doing the same thing.
Separately?
separately. They sat next to each other as she started talking about it, and the dude in the window was like giving her tips. They were talking about tips. Luke.
Okay.
What is happening? Stop it.
I don't even know how to respond to this.
Stop it. Everybody, please. Everybody needs to stop it.
You were on like ghost flight is not the correct term, but like you and your partner were the only people going to Singapore for vacation.
It turns out everybody on that flight was just trying to get as many miles as possible.
Right. The
it's the equivalent of money laundering. It's like these people are all laundering miles.
Yeah. The flight attendants are all like, you want the chicken again today?
They know everybody. Jeff?
Yeah. Outrageous. Also, hang on. Okay. Because let's not stay on this for too long, but I do have, like, because I've looked up, occasionally when I go on a flight, it'll be like, upgrade your flight for $76, and I'm like, yeah. I get excited, but then I realize that it's like the smallest leg of my flight.
Yeah.
But one of the perks is that you get like 5x miles. I don't know if that helps with the Million Mile Club, but like, just do. Give me first class if I'm doing this.
Luke, this person had already done that a few times.
Okay. Does the 5x thing help? Or whatever it is. Is there a multiplier?
Luke.
Luke,
the air... I don't care. I don't care about any of this. The airline... What I've decided from this is the airline needs to just let them buy it. Please just let them buy it. Don't make them sit in the plane. Don't make them do this, guys.
There needs to be just like where it's like, I mean, if you want to buy it, I guess you can give us a bunch of money for some extra perks.
Right. You could even let them put it on, like, let them finance it, right? Like,
yeah.
You don't even have to give them the perks until they pay it off.
Listeners, if one of you are doing this,
stop. Stop doing it.
Confess and then stop, please.
Please.
Or at least do the travel for travel's sake as well.
You get off, leave the airport. Leave the airport, please. I beg of you.
I have heard good things about Singapore's airport.
Oh, everybody's saying that. It's fine. It's cool.
It's very cool.
Anyway.
Okay.
Should we talk about Babel?
Let's talk about Babel. So like I said, up to chapter 10. Dan, how's your language skills actually for your travels?
Apa Bakar. Apa Bakar is how you doing in Malay.
Okay.
And then you'd say Baik Sehat would be a response. That means good, healthy.
Okay.
You could say Selamat Datang, which is welcome in Malay.
Nice.
Singapore, they all speak English. So.
Oh, okay.
English is good. We're still doing the English right now.
Okay. That was my attempt at transitioning into Babel.
Anyway, transition. I feel like Babel, we've hit another one that's a tough one, Luke.
Yeah, tough in what way?
It's a very serious book. This is classic, like, classic white people doing some bad shit.
Right. Which I knew going in. I don't think I've read other R.F. Kuang books, but I think this is kind of a genre for her. It's good so far. I mean, it's a tough read. You're absolutely right. It's a bad look.
Yeah. But we're going to find some comedy here. We're going to find some jokes in here, I think.
Yeah.
First one, this author clearly just wants to talk about, like, linguistics and etymology, right?
Yeah, for sure.
This author just loves language.
I'm assuming, I don't actually know a ton about R.F. Kuang, but I'm assuming that she is a linguist in some form or fashion.
Right. Right. It's given, I mean, the number of also, given the number of lectures that she's just fully writing out about linguistics, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, you just like really love this stuff and want to talk about it. And that's cool. I'm enjoying it. But you're like fully writing out the whole lecture. Whereas in other books about people going to school, they're like, maybe they write one of them out, one little lecture out. And then the rest are like, and they went back to potions class or whatever.
I do always wonder, because a lot of books will have, like, you know, informative stuff. Mm-hmm. Not to this level, I think. But I always wonder how much the author has to, like, do research on whatever they're talking about. And how much of that, how much of their, like, writing time is taken up by research. Because if she is not already super familiar and like, went to school for this or something like that, then she's having to do a lot of research. Because there's a lot of detail in here. Right.
A ton of detail. I wonder if this was like a YouTube rabbit hole that this author went down where they were just like, there's like a few YouTube channels that are all about linguistics and etymology and stuff. And maybe they were just like deep in it.
There's a small subset of YouTube channels that has just hundreds of hours of content. Each video, correct, 2.5 hours long, probably.
Yes, definitely. And I feel like this author maybe went down a rabbit hole and then was like, how is that productive? Wait, I got to make this productive.
Right. Right. I do think, well, she may also have formal training, but.
Yeah, could but be, like it the, could be that too.
We like the YouTube idea. Big YouTubers here. Don't you think it's more of a Wikipedia thing though? Actually, I don't know. Probably YouTube.
I feel like some of the lectures she's writing are giving me like YouTube video sort of style.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Let me do something small.
Yeah.
To get us started off a little funny. I don't remember the exact details of this, but I did love that there was a classic roast on English food being unseasoned. The old joke about the English like subjugating the entire world for spices and then not using them.
And then not using them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love that was in there, so that was fun. We had to get it in.
Right. I also, however, like that Rami is still not able to make good food. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's trying, but it's not like he's just immediately good at making food that tastes good with spices. It's still bad. Right. It's just spicier now.
Yeah, I did. I appreciate that as well. Let me do one more small thing.
Yeah.
How do I phrase this? I think there was a little water reference in here, a little early water treatment reference that I have to call out.
Okay, I'm struggling to remember the reference. You're gonna have to help me out.
It was because this is before Jon Snow discovered the source of cholera, and so there's a reference to miasma.
You mean when he blew the horn and like started the winter, the Neverwinter?
Not that Jon Snow. You'll be surprised to hear. The Jon Snow that tracked the well, Dan.
Oh, yes, I do remember this. You talked about this in your dissertation, didn't you?
I don't remember. Okay. I mean, I've talked about it before.
I've heard you present about this guy, because I remember reading it and being like, I already knew that. Luke told me about this guy.
Well, he's a very famous water. Like, it's like the origin of disinfection. Yeah. So, but it's a treat because this is, I think, before that happens, and so she makes a reference to miasma as the leading theory, which is coming back, by the way.
Okay.
Dan's been out of the country, so he doesn't know that we're all in on miasma and and out on germ theory.
Oh, germ theory is out. Okay. Well, I'm not a biologist, so.
Welcome back to the U.S., Dan. Anyway, cool. What else do we got going on?
What do we think about this wine party? I want to get your take on this wine party that Robin goes to.
With the rich kids?
With the rich kids, yeah.
Honestly, more benign than I was expecting it to be.
I think the question I have for you is, do you think this would be fun?
Well, okay, describe the wine party and like what aspect of it you're referring to.
Wine party, there's like three dudes with a bunch of liquor, and they're all kind of... Now, it seems like one of them is poorly playing the piano, and the others are just kind of sitting around shooting the shit.
Yeah.
Now, thinking back to my college days, this feels somewhat similar to like a hang that I might have been a part of. Mm-hmm. However, this is not a hang that I feel like you invite a new random person to.
Right.
This is a hang like sophomore or junior year with your buddies who you're really tight with, and you're playing like COD Zombies or something.
Right. It's tough to like think of the equivalent, because ours is like video games and theirs is like, because this is before there was entertainment.
Right. But I feel like just like three dudes in a room getting hammered without any sort of like entertainment aside from a kid playing the piano and like one guy who you're all trying to impress. It feels like it's a bad hang. It feels like it's a boring hang. I feel like you need more people, because as soon as you get enough people, it becomes a party. Like, as soon get enough people in a room, now it's a party. You can, like, there's party dynamics that happen. But when there's three dudes, it's not enough for party dynamics.
I think the distinction that you have made, but I want to clarify, is that it's not enough people to invite a new person to.
Yes.
It isn't, like, just for a normal hang, like... me and three of my friends or something like that, we're going to have some drinks and we're going to, I don't know, just hang out or something. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. That's a good hang. That's a chill hang.
That's a good hang. But I'm not going to like invite a stranger to be like, let me show you how cool we are in my apartment. That's a thing where it's like, we're going to go out to dinner.
Correct.
And I want you to introduce you to my friends, and we're going to hang out for like an hour and have dinner.
Yes.
That's not like my apartment.
Yes, you're not meeting them for the first time at your chill hang. Like, you're going to play ping pong or something first. You're doing a low stakes meeting activity to get the vibe.
Right. I do think just like the idea of inviting people over that are not your immediate friends, you need to have like... Yeah, I don't know what the appropriate number is, but it's more.
It's a lot more, yeah. Also, the vibe I got, without knowing how big it was going to be, they're sending out, like, handwritten invitations to this? Mm-hmm. That felt like it was going to be a bigger event. It felt like it wasn't just three dudes playing beer pong in your apartment.
Right. I mean, okay. We have to acknowledge the time and cultural differences.
Okay.
This is like 1827 or something.
Sure, acknowledged.
Acknowledged, setting that aside. Now, I do think that the handwritten invitation feels like a lot. Especially because like, and if you do the handwritten invocation, like, I think you just need to have it be more formal when the guy that you're inviting comes in.
Right. Like, there is a series of events happening. There's sort of like a schedule to the evening.
Right.
It's not just a hang. This is not a hang. You did not set the tone for this.
I agree. It's kind of a weird vibe. Now that we're talking about it, it feels more depressing, but I don't think it actually is, because this group is like rich and popular.
Right.
Now, okay, but to my initial reaction, like, they honestly seem kind of fine, though.
I think they do. I agree.
Like they don't, I mean, other than the, you know, like, baseline level of, like, racism and stuff like that.
Right, that's, like, everybody here has, yeah.
Right. There's not much negative beyond that, other than just them... I don't know. They don't, like, bully him, I don't think.
No, which is what I was worried.
A super negative interaction.
No. They really just seem to kind of want to get to know him.
If anything, this is going to be a hot take. He comes off a little snobbish.
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I think you're right, maybe a little bit, but I think he also identifies the leader as like a dude who everybody is like deferential to, and he's sort of like holding court with this thing.
Sure.
And he doesn't love it. Like, Robin's not about it in that way.
Yeah.
Which I guess, but like, he did invite you over. You could just like sort of politely bow out. You don't have to like flip the table on him. Let him hold court if he wants to.
I mean, I think, well, the thing that I'm realizing is just like, it was all fairly small.
Right.
In terms of like the effect that it had. I don't know if it'll have a bigger effect on the story going forward, but like, just seems kind of unimportant. Nothing super dramatic happened.
Right. And yeah, they did seem genuinely interested in like meeting him and talking to him. And like even when he was like disagreeing and sort of showing the head guy up, they were like listening to him. They weren't like, I don't know. It felt like a fine interaction. It felt like, I think you're right. I think maybe he is being a little snobbish because they were kind of
like,
nice.
Oh, his poetry. He goes back to his friends and is like, this dude sucks at poetry.
Yeah, that's pretty rude. Is this guy like a pretentious, like, idiot? Yeah, for sure. But also, like, I don't know. He was kind of nice.
Yeah, he seemed fine.
So.
Very handsome, too.
Yeah, important. That's important.
I don't know. You can make... Well, I guess they don't have time for friends outside of their immediate group.
Right.
Actually, speaking of friends, okay. There's a lot in this that is reminding me of the saying... Not the saying, but like when people say college is the best years of your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone says that. And I forget if we've talked about this before or not. But I think that this kind of shows it, where it's like that saying and his experience here is mostly just because like in college, you live very close to or with all of your friends, and you can hang out with your friends all the time.
Yeah. Which turns out is really cool.
That's kind of what it is.
We've definitely talked about this before, so we don't need to belabor this point. I agree with you. I do think I have realized another aspect of it, though, which is highlighted in this book of like magical college time, which is everybody has a mission. It feels like the sense of purpose everybody has is so clear. And it's like, oh yeah, our mission is to do well in all these classes that we're taking. And like,
oh, I see what you mean by mission. Yeah.
And like, we're all working on this goal and it's really clear and it's really obvious. And there's like, it's not really ambiguous, like what we should be doing with our time. It's like,
right.
we know exactly what we need to do. It's let's just do it. Let's lock in. And you don't have to be like, should I apply for a new job today? Or like, right. Is what I'm doing actually good for the world? Or like, am I good at my job? I don't know.
Right.
It's all just like, you got an A, good job. Or study for this test. You know, it's so well defined.
And also like the concept of learning new stuff is quite enjoyable as well.
Right. Right.
So yeah, this is what it, like, because there's many times throughout this book where Robin is described as like being the happiest he's ever been.
Right.
And it's very much just giving that college of the best years of your life saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me,
honestly, Luke, this is gonna seem like an insane comparison. I recently started watching Apocalypse Now because I've never seen it before. It's about the Vietnam War, and it was referenced in a different book I read recently called The Sympathizer. It feels like war to a certain degree is like college, where you have like very clear and defined jobs to do. You're hanging out with all these like people that are similar age to you and you form tight bonds with. Obviously war is different in the sense that like people are being traumatically damaged for life. But there, it feels like there are some similarities of like, I don't know, like, hanging with the boys, having a very clear objective and like not a lot of ambiguity to what you're supposed to do. It's also
There's a lot of hierarchy.
People are talk about it being exhausting, but they're not like they're sort of wearing it as a badge of honor of how like tiring it is, and they're willing to do it because of how like unambiguous the thing is that they're doing. I don't know. There's some parallels there that it's going to take a smarter podcast than this one to draw out, but
I can see it.
But yeah, feels sort of warlike. Like there's some parallels there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luke, can we talk about the magic?
Yes.
This is a fantasy podcast, and we've yet to talk about any magic yet.
I know, unacceptable.
The silver magic initially is hitting me as placebo. Is it hitting you that way too?
I hadn't thought about it, honestly.
Because they're like, hey, if you put one of these bars in your carriage, it makes it a little bit safer. Or like, hey, if you put one of these on a boat, the boat gets a little bit more fish statistically.
Right. There are some that are not like an immediately observable effect. I will grant you that. But there are some that are, right?
I mean, the treacle one that he uses seems to be observable, and so does the invisibility one. Yeah. For sure. But aside from those two, all the other ones he describes where they're like burying it under a tree to like hopefully get more fruit from the tree.
Right.
Make a spy forget something. It's like, how can you really know if they've forgotten something, guys?
Well, so some of these, like my note on this is that it seems very imprecise for a lot of them. Right. Because let's say what the concept is to make sure that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Because I honestly had a bit of a hard time. So you essentially write one word in one language on one side of it and a corresponding word in a different language on the other side of it. And the difference between the translations, there's like some meaning there that gets brought out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Somehow.
Yes. And yes, it's like the meaning that's lost from translating one word into another.
Yeah.
gets captured, and that meaning is the magic that happens.
Yes.
Which is tough. Like, I have a lot of questions about how this works.
Yeah.
Because it feels like, how do you know which direction it's going?
Ooh.
Like, meaning is lost going either direction in translation.
Right, right. Because so, like, sometimes you lose, I think they've referenced, like, you lose the meaning from one word. Like, one word has more meaning than the other, or something, or one word is more precise, and so, like, you lose something if you go from this word to the other word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's, like, which word you say first or something.
Oh, so you could flip it if you just say the other word first, and then it becomes a completely different effect.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because, yeah, I mean, if that is the sort of translation that you're doing, then you can go backwards, and the word, whichever word you started with, is going to have a different meaning. Because it's not like English is the one that, like, has the least amount of meaning every time. It's not like the right. English word is the one that always has less meaning. It just has different meaning than the other one.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, that's unclear to me. It's unclear to me how that works.
I mean, okay, but my main point is, again, there's a few things. Okay. So one is, it seems to be not necessarily like the meaning that the person who writes it interprets as the difference, right? It's like the actual real difference according to some
mm-hmm.
omniscient third party.
Right. Like, there's some magical link between the word, the, like, written symbols, written or spoken symbols, and this, like, nebulous, like, platonic meaning that exists out there that they, like, they're right. connected to.
Right. There is, like, an absolute value
yeah.
between these two words that is not dependent on the person that is doing it.
Right. That's interpreting it. Like, right. connotation does not exist.
Right. It's like a scientific law. Like, you can experiment with it
right.
and reproduce it with different people.
Right. Right.
And it changes over time as language changes. I don't know. It seems tough because also a lot of them are very vague. Like, the one that you already mentioned, which is making spies forget, it's basically like the difference between the words are like it's idiot and idiot in a different language. I forget which one.
Yeah.
And one of them is the difference between it is basically like you lose your information that you knew. And it's like, but how do you specify how much, right? His example of using it is with a spy or something that you need to wipe their memory.
Yeah.
But like, if you use it, do they lose all of their memory?
Right. Have you just lobotomized them?
Yeah. I imagine, and we haven't seen this, but there's got to be some like experiment, like a legion of people testing these.
Here's the thing, Luke, which I think we haven't seen yet, like you said, and I think we're going to, is I think that they just haven't explained this all the way, because it definitely depends on who's doing it.
Mm.
And the evidence we have for that is Robin, when they get the invisibility bar, Robin's able to make it work. And they
right.
are. And I think part of that is because I guess they do mention this. In order to make it work, the person doing, like, casting the spell has to have, like, a deep understanding of the two words. Now, the thing that's crazy about this, Luke, is that it's definitely person-dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Because regional dialects have different meanings about words. Like the same word in the same language can mean different things in different parts of a country.
Right.
And so, like, there is no... And maybe this is the point that we're both getting stuck up on, as it seems like there is no like clear link to a abstract concept that every word points to, that it's like immutable.
Right.
But I don't know. It feels like they're implying that with these bars.
I mean, I think my takeaway is that like you can only get so far with theory for this.
Right.
And like I think that the linguists in Babel, the actual physical tower that do this, like they need people testing it. Because like you can't get all the way there with, you can only honestly, I think, get only like partially there with theory. And then you need people to test it like in very complicated scenarios. Right. Because like one of them is, he talks about the ship one. Right.
Yeah.
Where he's like, this one keeps the more sea creature meaning of ship, and that makes it catch more fish. And it's like, okay, that link is like not super clear. So like there must either there's more to it than that, or like someone just tested this a bunch and it's like a very imprecise thing. And you guys like get close and then do experiments with the bars.
This is what I mean when I say it feels a little placebo-y, because how did you even test the fish thing? Like, it feels like you would have to do so much experimentation with it.
Right. Because you have to control the waters around too.
Right. You have to have like two boats, one with the bar, one with a bar that isn't magically infused, and in like the same, I don't know. It just doesn't.
The research dollars are huge.
It feels like the research would have to be massive, especially because it's not an effect like the treacle thing that you can directly observe. It's a statistical effect. So you have to test it a bunch to even know what it's doing.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of regression on these on these things.
I think the Babel folks are taking too much credit for it. I think that in the background there's like a different tower that has the like science, the like, listen, maybe this is me trying to justify my STEM background. But there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. For sure. There's got to be the data, like data science tower somewhere.
Yeah. Oh man, it's complicated. It's interesting though.
It is very interesting.
I am enjoying the little lessons on etymology and linguistics and stuff that I'm getting. I will say I'm probably not absorbing it, but it's a good read.
I'm also enjoying it. Yeah. Luke, okay, there is one thing that we learned about the like language stuff that Professor, I think Lavelle or however we're going to say his name, mentions. Because as soon as he starts talking about how the magic works, I'm like, oh, just make up a new language that, and you could do whatever you want. You can just like make a sick word that's like flying. This word also means to fly in a really cool way. And he's like, he at one point says you can't do that because like a made up language isn't a real language. Dude, every language is made up. Here's all you have to do. Cause they're already doing this with Latin, where they're like, they're making everybody in Oxford learn Latin. And part of that enables the magic to work going from Latin to English, because there's like people using this language. Right.
Right. Right.
Just make up a new language and make everybody learn it and be like, this is the language we learn so we can do sick silver magic.
Right. I do think that they gave up a little bit too early on this.
Yeah. 100%.
Like I could see there being something where it's like, you can't super explicitly tell people to use this language because it does magic, but they do acknowledge that like languages change over time. We get words from everywhere.
Right.
Can you just like incept some words into the cultural understanding? That's easy. That feels easy to me.
Oh, it's so easy. All you have to do. Oh my God.
Get some cool 12-year-olds to start saying a word, mm-hmm. find a way to get them, and then it's like, oh man, this what's the age that we're thinking actually?
Well, Luke, if we want to be time period specific, all you got to do is find a really famous English playwright and get him to make up a bunch of fucking words in his hype plays that everybody loves, and you're good to go.
Right.
Because fucking Shakespeare made up like a bunch of words. Mm-hmm. And now we use them. Just find one of those guys.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I feel like that there's potential here. There's Poe here that we're missing.
There is. Maybe that's another wing of the university that the babblers are not aware of.
Right, viral new words. Viral new word department.
Yeah.
One of the other things I loved about this little lecture that he gave was he was like asking them to guess what words they shouldn't put on the bar. And I think Rami at one point is like, oh, we shouldn't put the different names of God on the bar. And the professor's like, no, don't worry about that. And in my mind, the reason why he's like, don't worry about that. If there was a God, he wouldn't have let us do all this fucked up shit. Like, that doesn't exist.
Obviously. Right.
But also, I felt like that was a great answer. I was like, damn, Rami, that's a good answer. Because what does
it's a good
happen?
Answer. Listen, there's a lot of good answers there. This is why I think I'm kind of coming out against the babblers, because they're too into translation.
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, obviously, the one thing that's most important that you can't put in there is translate. And it's like, come on. There's clearly more words.
Right.
That you wouldn't be able to combine, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can't just be. I didn't even really understand the thing about trans.
Because it's like a paradox. Because like I guess the idea is that like two different words for translation have some meaning that's lost, but the meaning that's lost is about improving translation. And so, because you can't ever have a perfect translation, trying to do the magic to create a perfect translation ruins the magic, but then creates the magic. And so it's sort of like, like this sentence is false, the previous sentence is true, whatever the paradox is. Okay. Okay. I didn't say that right. I think it's the other way. But I feel like they're just creating a paradox. I don't know. I don't think it matters a whole lot, specifically how it works. Except for this weird thing where now the atoms of silver that you've created are poison for some reason. Which that's definitely going to come up later, right? This is quick Dan theory. Somebody's going to use this for like a very serious act of like, I don't want to say terrorism here, but like they're going to use it to destroy a lot of the silver that's been stored up.
Especially because he makes a big note to say that it messes up all the silver that it's on too.
Right. Right. Yeah. That you just can't use it. How do you, okay, real quick, Luke, what do you think not the biohazard, but the like cleanup, like the remediation process is like for this silver? Because it feels like he just created such a huge cleanup hazard in his workspace by shattering this bar of silver that now if it touches any other silver, it like ruins it.
Well, I don't think it's just I think it's like when it happens. I don't think does it spread? I thought it was like if it was on something that is silver when you make it blow up. Even now, like it's,
I thought that it was like it's permanently contaminated, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's only while it's doing its weird back and forth paradox thing before it shatters.
I'm, I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, the cleanup, if what you're thinking is true, then the you got to be careful with this stuff.
This cleanup is horrible.
And all Yucca Mountain.
Well, because also, Luke, you can't get it back in circulation, right?
Right.
Because you can't melt it down. Because if you melt down even like a little piece of it with another piece of silver, now that one's dead. And now, if you melt that one down, now, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a mess.
It's like holy water. A drop of holy water turns a gallon into holy water.
Right. Is that how that works?
I think so.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. You gotta do... They're pretty casual with blowing this thing up, honestly.
Yeah, it felt like way too casual.
But I can see why they get excited about learning what they can do. I also see why he gets mad about them charging a bunch of money. Because like this is so valuable, right? Because like you recharge it by just like one of them going and saying the words again. Is that correct? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's just like a perfect subscription service, right?
Yeah.
Which feels like, I mean, they have a little discussion here about how knowledge should be free and openly accessible, especially about languages. But if I had one of these things, it would be like, okay, I could save like so much money every year if I just learn some words in this other language. Mm-hmm. And then I can be like, oh, okay, now I can just do it.
Well, but you have to know the language deeply. I don't think you can just know,
you're right,
like,
yeah,
the word deeply. I think you have to actually know the language.
Ah, but then, like, I don't know. It feels like it wouldn't be that hard to get fluent in one other language.
Yeah, but if you're like already a rich Londoner, you're just gonna.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's fair. But if you're a poor Londoner, it feels like you could
totally
undercut this whole
to
market.
Study this new language.
It's so valuable, though. Because you could undercut the whole market, Luke.
That's true. Oh, I guess you're saying you would start like servicing them as well.
Yeah, maybe you don't have the materials to produce the bars, but now you're like, hey, I'll do it for half of what they.
I'm sure
do.
They have some kind of like permitting system that keeps only the rich people able to do it.
They would.
Classic. Let me go back to something because I mentioned how this is like non-STEM research. I just want to say there is something very romantic about non-STEM research. Do you know what I mean?
Say
like
more.
Like they're all just sitting around kind of arguing about, and then they're like referencing historical thinkers and that kind of stuff. Like it's kind of like if it feels cool.
Whereas
when I'm doing it with my, it's like you have misinterpreted the data. This is the data. And it's like that's not as cool.
Luke, it feels much more like the process of like science in a crisis. It feels a lot more like when they were trying to figure out quantum mechanics. Do you know what I mean? And they were all just arguing about the data. And so, honestly, this felt sort of scientific to me. Like, this felt more like the process of science than, like, writing English. Like, this felt scientific where they're, like, trying to come up with the answer. They're, like, debating about the answer. They're, like... I don't know. It felt like a scientific process. And there's sort of a metric for validity. There's sort of like a, if you write it on the bar and it works, then you've got it. Like you figured it
out. Right.
And so people can get better at it because there is a metric of like, here's what we're trying to do. and like writing these grammaticas feels like a sort of a metric where they're saying this is the accepted version.
I guess that's fair.
Because, yeah, I mean, right now, I think a lot of the scientific research that you and I do is a lot more akin to, like, engineering than, like,
right,
fundamentally questioning the, like, basic principles that our research is built on, like, the paradigm that we operate under. We're, like, we've, like, pretty thoroughly accepted the atomic model and, like, quantum right. mechanics in our research. Now we're just sort of, like, problem solving within the paradigm.
Yeah, 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 that's fair.
But sometimes I do think about what the like dudes arguing about quantum mechanics, what that was like to just just be like, I don't know. What does this experiment mean? I don't fucking know. Let's make up something.
That's how it went down.
Yeah. Mostly, I think. And Einstein was like, I've got it, guys. Don't worry. And they were like, shut up, Einstein. Fuck off.
Classic Einstein.
No, they loved it. Cool. They loved it's that cool guy. Stuff.
Can we talk a little bit about the Hermes Society?
Yeah, we need to.
Hermes, if you're...
Ooh, it's definitely Hermes.
If
yeah.
you're a big shopper. okay, so basically Robin's half-brother has... I don't think he's like the founder of this society, right? He just like came into it.
Yeah, I think he's just a part of it.
Has, just by stroke of luck, they run into each other, and he kind of recruits Robin. The thing that I will say about this is I like the part about how it's not convenient and it doesn't make you rich and you just have to say yes or no kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like... It's like, can we give Robin a little bit of time to just like figure out what's going on? Mm. You know what I mean?
I mean, he gave him what, 5 days?
Yeah, but I like, he asks him to help with this robbery on like week 2 of classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that feels quick. Like even just logistically. In terms of, like, Robin doesn't really know the layout super well of the area. I don't know. There's a lot that I'm like, unless you guys are in, like, a super dire need right now of these.
I mean, they probably are. But, all right. My cynical side is saying that if you get him in early, now you have... something to blackmail him with.
Mm.
So like the fact that they got him in within the first like couple of weeks and they've like convinced him to help, now they have leverage over him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better to get that when he's sort of naive and maybe it's not in his best interest to actually do it.
I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Not to say that's what they're cynical. Doing. But, like, they have a lot of leverage over him now to keep helping them.
Right.
Because, yeah, we don't... Sure. What's his name? Griffin?
Mm-hmm.
Griffin claims that they're doing things that Robin would agree with. Robin has no idea what they're doing.
Right.
So, and that's risk. Sort of by design. Griffin is like... Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you anything about this. You just have to trust me.
Right.
Ah. Dangerous. Very dangerous.
It is. What do you think? Am I hearing from you that you believe there's something nefarious going on that side? Or are you keeping your guard up? Just to be safe?
I think I'm just keeping my guard up. I want to believe that they're doing good stuff. I'm worried about the lengths they're willing to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also worried because Robin seems to really like school. And I say, if you like school, that's okay. Keep going to school. The speaking right. as an educator Keep going to school, kids.
School's great. School's great, folks.
I do think their security system is kind of horrible.
It is, yeah.
Because it's like, oh, it's just the door doesn't open? That's it?
Yeah.
Come on, guys. You knew this was going to happen.
I do feel like the blood, like, there should be more going on with the blood.
The blood freaks me out. I feel like there should be less with the blood. Don't
take
my blood.
No, I mean, I agree with you, but, like, what? I don't know.
Like, it should give you more power.
This is what it is.
Right. No, exactly. If you make the locks better.
Yeah, because like the fact that so far we've only seen this makes me think that the blood is also like tracking him somehow, and they like that, actually yeah. can figure it out.
Right, right.
Unless they have some cool automated defense system that like only targets people that, when it gets triggered, it only targets people that don't have their blood in there or something. I don't know.
They've got like some turrets set up.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the high level silver. Production,
right?
It's like a yeah maybe we'll see how to make one of those later.
Because also, how does the blood thing even work? This is way too precise.
It does feel way too precise.
You found a word in two different languages that is different in such a way that allows you to be like, open this door when someone whose blood we have says this word. Pretty
correct.
Good.
Yeah.
They're good at this, I have to say.
They can do some things very well. Oh, man.
It's good. It's good stuff.
I'm excited to learn more about these silver bars, to see what they can do. Excited to hear about the data science division and the process of experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta find out what happens when you put the names of God on a bar.
I know.
It's gotta be something interesting. But in the meantime, Luke, we'll read the next third. We'll bring the hot takes.
And be dumb nerds.